Are we impressed by that photo of the galaxy? Are we impressed by it? I feel like we should be impressed by it.
Are we sure that that's the galaxy? I mean, it could just be a really dark marble that they just zoomed in on and shined light from the opposite side.
Yeah. Could be balls. Could be balls.
I mean, a marble.
I call them marbles. You call them balls. It is what it is.
Oh, it is Tuesday. It is July 12th. Dominique is in a panic room. What's going on, Dominique?
I mean,
it feels like he's about to drop some serious verses on us.
It's Tuesday, July 12th. So, I mean, anyone in sports media is either on vacation or in a panic room. So, I'm here presenting you with panic versions of hot takes presented to you by Corona, obviously. Mm.
Yes, we are being presented by Corona, Israel Gutierrez. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Life's a beach.
Wow. Alabaster, before I begin to say even more things that will toe the line between sincerity and sarcasm, where should we begin?
Guys, I'm pumped. Mid-July, this is my time. This is hypothetical time. This is weak story time. This is when we get to get real jacked up about, you know, LIV Golf and Tiger Woods, who's back for the British Open. And he's not pleased with the LIV Tour. My question, what is your reaction to Tiger blasting the LIV Tour and its players this morning?
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, if you were inside of the debatable group chat this morning, it was very just desolate and depressed. Alabaster was very much not on the "this is my time" kind of a note that he just sounded. Yeah. It was the "oh my god, how are we going to fill all of this time?" And now Tiger Woods is here. Tiger Woods is here to blast the LIV Golf Tour and its players this morning, but notably not the government of Saudi Arabia in any way.
Odd.
Like, if you were wondering what the story is really about, just go read or listen to what Tiger said, because it's not about any of the things that I think people were thinking it might be about when the whole Saudi Arabian government-backed golf tour thing started.
Yeah, I thought he would be, you know, Tiger would come out with the hammer and just say, hey, this is why it's, you know, it's wrong of these players to leave the tour. Instead, he's just protecting the PGA Tour, like just protecting the history of it and these younger players who went straight from amateur to the LIV Tour and their inability, perhaps, even though he might have some inside information, we don't know, he's Tiger Woods, he probably does, might not ever be able to play in the majors. And to me, while all of that is true, I was waiting for the hammer. I was waiting for the reason for some level of morality outside of just a money grab, because it's okay to grab money. You just have to display or just let everybody know where you're getting it from. And so this is where it just felt a little bit empty, but it also just kind of gives a little bit of a preview to what the Golf Board of Governors, which is very serious sounding, is probably going to do to these LIV players.
And Tiger, like, we shouldn't be surprised that Tiger would take that position. Tiger is not, nor has he ever shown a desire to be anything to us other than a golfer. He's not some social justice or, I mean, even like the opposite. Like, he's just not outspoken. He doesn't ever seem to have a strong opinion about anything. No. But it does seem to, it just like, they don't want to get it out the dirt. Like that type of
quote
is like, A, I wanted to hear Tiger Woods actually say that, and B, who, like, that part doesn't bother me. Like, somebody sees an easy route to some money, that part feels so American and rational, and I can rationalize that, I can justify that, like, that makes sense to me. The whole other part is the part to be objected to, and I guess Tiger, since he is the PGA Tour, frankly, like, for modern sports fans, Tiger Woods is the reason why we care about golf. A lot of, like, modern sports fans. And he views, to me, I'm assuming that he views the LIV Golf Tour as not only an affront to the PGA Tour, but an affront to the thing that he built. So maybe he's as offended. But for anybody else, it's like getting upset because you work at McDonald's, but you bought a Whopper. Like, I don't care. You hungry. eat.
Well, but this doesn't.
If only Burger King was hacks-on journalists in the back of buildings. That's a whole nother thing.
That's right. That's right. I'm not sure which company should be offended by the lack of bone sawing there.
Everybody.
But to your point about what Tiger is saying, right, about the dirt. Get it out the dirt, Tiger Woods.
Work harder for your money.
When I was a young billionaire, I was walking uphill both ways to the bank. Like, this is where you lose the sympathy of people who otherwise wanted to build an alliance against LIV Golf, because now Tiger Woods is the old man yelling at the kids for not having to work as hard as he did. And that's what it is.
On the other side, though, this time of obvious greed and just money collecting, he had, reportedly upwards of $1 billion thrown in his face. And, you know, say what you will about your belief in him winning another major, Tiger's done. Like, Tiger is done. And whether he wins one more or not, I'm not saying that he can't win one more. I'm just saying it would take all kinds of efforts and all things happening perfectly for that to happen again.
He's done until we need an A-block question that is,
of course,
is Tiger
of
done,
course.
Question mark, in which case the punctuation changes.
So he's done, question mark, currently. And then he could have taken that. And at a time where everybody's taking money, or a time where everybody's just showing their ass and just, you know, grabbing money as they go, like, he is standing up firm and saying, no, this still matters to me, even though I've got a probably less than 2% chance of actually accomplishing what I want to finish on this tour. It still matters to me more. So that, in a sense, can be taken, you know, for some level of, standing up for morals or what have you. But, I mean, you've got to say the words. You've got to talk about what makes, because if it was some other tour, some other clean money tour coming in and throwing billions and trying to ruin golf, I don't think people would have much of an argument, because then it just becomes a money thing and a tradition thing.
Dominique, we need you to refresh VMix. We lost your mic. We'll have you filibuster here, Pablo, for a minute.
Dominique will soon be back, like Tiger Woods will soon be back with a big question mark at the end of it. But Izzy, the whole thing about Dominique was trying to say, which is that, like, look, I also find all of this reprehensible, but I've buried the league. I haven't gotten to it yet. Dominique is, in fact, back, period. So, Dominique, pick up your thought about Tiger and what he was waiting to say.
It feels like we're giving him the benefit of the doubt, and we're just like, well, he hasn't gotten to the good stuff yet. We just got to wait around until he's going to get to the good stuff.
Yes.
And, like, the really reprehensible things and the reasons why we shouldn't be a part of LIV Golf. But he never got to that stuff, and maybe we should not extend him that benefit of the doubt. It seems like maybe that is not what offends him. What offends him is that you will not, like, bow to the prestige that is the PGA Tour. You will not chase his ghost, since we all agree that he's done, until we get to a point where we need to fill an A block, and then one of us, Pablo, will pretend like he's not done in order to be the straw man that we all need to survive an A block.
Right.
But I don't know, when have we seen Pablo, when have we seen Tiger take some sort of political stance? He's never going to put himself in that position, even on the safe ones. So, like, we need to take him for what he is. He's a guy who really believes in the history of this game that he's committed himself to.
Yes, and Izzy, what Tiger is saying in specific, too, is that, like, the history of this game is a game where you don't get to guarantee all of this money, even if you're not going to, like, win a tournament. Like, that's part of his complaint here, too, is that, like, and this part of it, exactly, the incentive thing, this part of it, you know, maybe there is an argument that is quite valid here about what's better for the sport itself, right? Is it good that you have all of these guys who don't really have to worry and live and die with the results of a tournament to get a paycheck? You know, like, this gets to a question about guaranteed money in sports in general, I suppose. But Tiger is clearly, he's a you need to earn your dinner kind of a guy.
It speaks to what's most important to Tiger. He just laid it out there for you. And the most important to Tiger is competition. It's like 56. What are you talking about? 50, or is it 56 or 54? However many holes it is. You got to play all 72 to be a real golfer, right? Forget all this loud, blaring music everywhere. It's got to be quiet. You've got to have all the pressure on you at all times for every single shot. You can't just do all this nonsense dancing around with all this music blaring and have no cuts and all this stuff. He just wants to compete. And I do think that that's something that you take away from the game of golf. Like, if I'm a young golfer coming up in the game, do I really want to go party, you know, and golf, you know, with this loud music, blaring music, have no real competition, great. Just collect my money and go? It sounds great if you're not a competitor. Tiger Woods, clearly a competitor.
When music volume is mentioned this often,
it sounds great to everyone.
So old, like talking about how loud the music is. Alabaster,
before we get to you, Alabaster, I just want to say this one thing: is how come competition is good for the golfers, but competition is not good for the league? If the thing that he's selling is a better product, when these players have to like fight to survive, why wouldn't the overall product be better if this particular company, or I guess it's not fair to call it a company, but
this particular
tour,
authoritarian government,
yeah,
that's why I don't think it's bad. I just think it's got to come from the right
Liv,
place.
I'm
it can't come
PGA.
From the Saudi public fund.
Yeah, I don't mean the authoritarian government. I mean the PGA Tour. Like, now, maybe Liv isn't the right authoritarian government to oppose them. But the idea, like, basketball got better. Football got better. These leagues got better when they had legitimate comp that they had to merge with. So Liv isn't the one. For reasons that Pablo has pointed out, and Tiger Woods will never. But the idea that he believes competition is good for the players, but not good for the companies, like, I don't understand.
But who is the ABA to this NBA here? Who is the league that's just supplementing or complementing? No, they're just ripping each other apart rather than bringing in new talent and supplementing the game. So I don't really think it helps to compete if you're just taking away, you know, if you're just contracting, essentially.
Multicolored golf ball, Alabaster. That is my ABA solution. What do you
got? I got three things. First of all, Izzy, the ABA to the NBA was the ABA. Second of all, call me old school. I kind of think Tiger's right. The history of this stuff matters. Like, I'm not a golf fan, but, like, I thought it was sick that Tiger came back and was like, I want to be like Ben Hogan and play after this car crash and play good golf. I thought, like, his chase of Jack was sick. That's the stuff that was, like, the most interesting thing to me. And then the third point, the biggest thing beyond the moral reprehensible nature of the Live Tour, beyond the gimmicks of it, the product stinks. I don't want to see Pat Perez and Phil Mickelson go shoot 85s. Okay. If I want to see people shoot in the 80s, like, I'll go hack
didn't
it
Tiger,
up in a public course.
Didn't Tiger effectively call it, like, a senior tour? Like, it is that. It is not great golf. It's just a couple of guys who happen to be hanging on to the top of their game.
But I think there are a couple of things you said, Alabaster, that I want to seize on that relates to that. Number one, you kept on using the word sick because you're a young person who says sick like it's good. I think Tiger's also just sick in terms of, like, he is a competitive, hyper sort of competitive maniac who just, to Izzy's point, thirsts for competition, is offended in his DNA that people are not going to have to do this the way that he did it, because he is Tiger goddamn Woods and he beat everybody and has all of the scalps to prove it and the bank account as a result. But the other thing about this, right, in terms of, like, okay, what do we think of the Live Tour and, like, how does it offend? Like, did you guys see that video that people were posting from, like, the plane that some of the Pat Perez's and the Live golfers took? Like, Dominique, how would you describe that plane? Because it felt like the thing designed to trigger golf fans who were mourning that their golf isn't the same anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say it seemed like the Live Golf Tour on a plane. Like, it's all the things that Izzy was talking about, like music and lights and all the hoopla that you really don't need on a plane. They put it on a plane, just like the stuff you don't need at a golf tournament. They put it in a tournament. And to Alabaster's point, you're probably right. The history of golf does have value, but it's not something that I'm trying to defend. I guess, like, when you make
it
down,
will.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Because, Dominique, like, how did you get into golf? Because to me, it was strictly Tiger. He was the one who got me into it. A little bit of Freddie Boom Boom Couples when I was a kid, but mostly Tiger. And that wasn't because I was like, wow, he shaped that shot brilliantly. No, it was because I was comparing him to the history of golf. He was something different. He was fresh. And every once in a while, I'd watch the whole... And actually, that's what got me into golf. That's what got me into watching a shot or, you know, being impressed by a putt and everything else. And now I consider myself an actual golf fan. You take take that away. You take all of a sudden, it's just like a guy who didn't really have to work for it, had a bunch of money thrown his way. Maybe you're into golf, maybe you're not, but it's not going to really grow your interest in the game just from watching them out there partying necessarily. I think you're less relatable to fans if you just go grab $100 million and say, hey, I'm going to play golf in this party atmosphere, than if you, you know, do as Tiger said, is, you know, work through the dirt and get yourself to this place and then, you know, become this famous athlete. So to me, I think there is something to the history of golf having to pair with the athlete and then creating a story.
So first of all, Tiger, I believe the kids say you get it out the mud, so you need to add some water to your get it out the dirt.
Right.
Second of all, you asked what brought me into golf. I mean, I can speak from a historical standpoint, carrying a bag and being called boy, even though you're a grown man. Like, that is the history of golf that we are protecting. Like, I get the point that you're making, but let's not hold golf up. Like, didn't the Masters just have their first woman and black person join Augusta, yes, like recently? Like, this history is a history that starts at a certain point, and we try to pretend like the rest of the stuff doesn't matter. But it does. Like, although segregation is, like, deep in all of our sports and all of our history, there are sports that have separated themselves from that better than golf. Like, the reason why,
yes,
part of the reason why Tiger Woods was so interesting was because he ain't look like the rest of them. So, like, that history in golf is, like, I think that's one of the things that a competitive league might bring that could.
But live is still live, golf.
Yeah, live is
live
the
is still
one.
The sport, and unless it's sort of changing or advancing racial, you know, harmony in the world, like, I don't think it's doing anything to separate itself necessarily in that respect.
I think the problem is that live is the alternate league. Like, I'm imagining a future, because Tiger did not object to the fact that it's connected to the Saudi government, which is, like, if you're doing, like, the repression Olympics, like, they beat golf. The Saudi government beats golf. I guess my point is, what Tiger is objecting to are things that are also inhibiting the progression of golf, like holding on to this past in history. Like, the point about ABA, NBA is they had the three-point line, they were doing dunks, they had a different color ball. Like, they did things differently and things that were slightly more culturally adjacent to black culture, which is that's why basketball is popular now, because basketball leaned into that. And so I guess that's my point. It's not since
can live advance the game.
Yeah. No, live and
or something.
That's the challenging part. It's like, live is the example we have to use. So live is not going to be that. I'm just speaking to Tiger's response to live. Tiger's response to live holds up even if Pablo starts a league today that is fun and different and new. His response to live is not about the things that it should be about. The things that he's opposed to in live are the things that, I mean, honestly, I feel like it's a little uncomfortable. I'm sure the NBA didn't love the ABA, but I guarantee you now, Adam Silver and the owners acknowledge that the ABA is the reason why the NBA is as big as it is now.
And if you were Tiger, obviously, you probably don't want to pull on that thread and then have everybody questioning where your money's coming from, you billionaire. You know,
well,
probably. I'm sure people will bring up China and Nike.
Exactly.
And
exactly. Nike. No, this is exactly. These are all the reasons I think Tiger Woods is perhaps wise to not go and enter the repression Olympics, as Dominique just put it. But for me, if I'm starting a golf tour, by the way, I'm going to do something similar to what Liv is doing, insofar outside of the no bone saws. Rule number one, no bone sauce. Yes. But rule number two, you can still enter all of the majors. Like, that to me is still where the story is, Alabaster. Like, tell me if anything has changed as to whether the live golfers are going to be able to compete in the actual tournaments that people watch.
Well, that,
because to me, there is the history of the game, and then there's the viewership experience of the game. And I think those two things are remarkably different.
So that is actually, to me, the most interesting comment that Tiger Woods made in his sort of barrage on the LIV Tour. Tiger Woods, time for conspiracy alabaster. Tiger Woods knows things. And when Tiger Woods was talking about these guys might not get world golf ranking points and might not be in the majors, to me, that's an alarm bell that he knows something that we don't yet, that they're going to pull the points from these guys and there will actually be repercussions.
But that also feels like Tiger Woods' brain, you know? It's sort of like, Tiger, the only person who has that leverage to, like, make demands and be like, if I don't show up, guess what's not going to – like, only he only he has that ability to be the center of the universe. Do you think the Open or the Masters even, like the U.S. Open, do you think they're going to be like, oh, all of the, like, the big names, we don't want them anymore?
Like, well, they're all doing meeting up in St. Andrews, right? And so, like, I'm sure they all checked in with Tiger while they were there. Hey, what do you think about this? Is this going to work for you?
I just feel like Tiger is the only person who can credibly be like, do what I want or you're not going to get what you want. And everybody else, they're just following the money, man. Like, hey, we need these guys to go to our major because they're really good and really famous. And these are the live guys I'm talking about.
Pablo, in terms of the interest of these majors and whether, you know, these players being allowed to play in the majors, whether it ramps up my interest or not, there might be a couple of players. Like, I used to be a huge Bryson DeChambeau fan. It still makes me mad when people call him DeChambeau. I don't know why. Like, it feels like that's unnecessary. DeChambeau. But now, it was before he went to the LIV Tour, kind of just didn't vibe with him, just not really a fan. And so now, if I see him at these majors, I am cheering actively against him. So it becomes a different fan experience, but it's still a pretty decent fan experience. You know, I've never cheered against a guy winning a major. Maybe Vijay Singh one time, because I think there's somebody else that I wanted to win instead. But I will actively cheer against these guys.
I've learned two things. Izzy has very strange golf preferences. Hates Vijay Singh, yeah, loves Bryson DeChambeau. The second thing that I've noticed, though, Izzy, is like, does anybody who dislikes the golfers that Tiger is threatening to leave out of the majors, does anyone who like just likes to watch golf actually not want to visually watch them in these majors? Because I feel like you hate them, you still want to see them, even if it's just to lose.
Right. And that's that freaking guy, wow, what a shot, basically.
Yeah, live golf. I think we did a good job. That's some delicious chicken salad we just made right now.
Damn, sprinkled in some, I like some cranberries in my chicken salad.
There we go.
Just like slather on that mayo. We did a good job.
Well
delicious.
Done.
Cranberries. All the food groups.
Team pat on the back. And now we can go for what the NBA pats on the back, which is sometimes mediocrity. The NBA play-in tournament is here to stay.
Pablo.
My question to you, does it actually make the season better?
Oh, sorry. For the podcast audience, we're high-fiving each other.
No.
Wow.
does it make the season better? For those couple of days where your options are no basketball or play in tournament basketball, it makes it better. I don't care that much about, because the biggest complaint is, you know, it's taking a spot away from a team that maybe deserved it, when really the 7 or 8 seeds are never really going to be championship contenders there. I'm of the belief that it doesn't really take the teams that want to tank away from tanking, and this year is going to be a great test for that with the number one pick, Victor.
I'm going to Wembanyama.
There we go. but I do think maybe 2 or 3 or 4 teams might, you know, sort of not tank, if you will, as a result of this. But I don't think it's that huge of a deal one way or the other. I do think, though, what the most important thing that they're talking about is, the take foul. And I think if you are going to eliminate the take foul, I think he is inside of your hand, it's got to be punitive, like very punitive, and it's got to be like no subjectivity to it. Basically, on a change of possession, any penalty in the backcourt should be at least a free throw and a possession, because if you take away like the fast break, like the way basketball is played today, the Showtime Lakers never would have existed. And it's such an element of the game that, you know, offense, defense, special teams, like the running game is a part that coaches used to say, hey, you've got to stop the running game. You've got to. And now it's just, hey, I'll stop it by fouling. And it takes the beauty of the game away. So that, I think, is the most important thing they're talking about. Not necessarily the play-in.
So for the podcast audience, we've been tickling each other this entire time.
Pablo
and Dominique.
And also, Izzy decided that the take foul was more interesting than the entire topic that Al Bassett gave us. So I want to try and breathe some life into that original angle, Izzy, because you said something that I fully agree with. And Dominique, when he said no with 0.5 seconds having elapsed.
Oh, no, I got more, but go ahead.
No, but this is my take, right? The play-in tournament is trying to solve a problem. The problem is that teams don't care about the regular season. I agree with the attempt to try to solve the problem. It's just kind of like the rhythm method of contraception. It's like not really going to work. I admire that you care enough to try, but you know there are going to be some things that really do sneak through that you're like, oh, I wish that hadn't happened. You know, like, but you're trying.
I might have to call you
cool.
later
like,
and get a little
like
bit of info
analogy
on that method.
Is one that I wish hadn't happened.
I
love the analogy, but I do think it kind of backfires because right now, if we're being completely honest, too many teams get in the NBA playoffs already
half
without
the
play-in tournament.
Half the league makes the playoffs.
So without that, and if you're the issue with NBA basketball is the regular season is too long and not interesting enough. So to me, this makes it even easier to make like the playoffs or the play-in. So it makes the 82 games even less important because you can stink in 82 games and still potentially, like you can be below 500 and make the playoffs. You can be way below 500 and make the play-in. So like, it's not gonna reduce like load management. It's not going to impact anyone who has a desire to tank. If there's a great player on the horizon, like getting backing in to the eighth seed so you can get blown out or swept is not going to make anybody not do that. So, like, the only value that the play-in tournament offers, I think, is the game itself. So, like, when the play-in tournament happens, I like watching it. There are, like, star players.
The T-Wolves cried.
Yes. The league is so talented that there are star players who will not make it in the playoffs, and a play-in tournament is like a semi-high-pressure situation to watch them play. That's good. But it does not have – actually has the opposite effect, I feel, on the rest of the things in the league that actually need to be addressed more seriously because you can't fix tanking. You can't fix it.
No, not –
one player is too
important.
If you
have a draft, exactly, you can't.
Unless you, like, randomize it. Like in completely
right.
take
you'd have
your
to totally change
it.
The standings and, as related yeah. to
upset
the
like
odds.
Deep the deep deep socialist history of professional sports and take away the like reverse seeding of the draft. If you're gonna do that, then you can eliminate tanking. If you're not gonna do that, tank is gonna be around because if you happen to get LeBron James, your life is made and
of
it's
course.
Worth. Stinking and amassing as many draft picks as possible.
Did
so,
you
like,
guys know that the Minnesota Timberwolves fans are kind of sensitive about being called the T-Wolves now? They're no longer the T-Wolves. They're either the Wolves or the Timberwolves. Look at the jerseys.
Why? What's their issue?
I have no idea. I just got a couple of nasty notes one time when I called them the T-Wolves on air. I said T-Wolves coach such
wow.
and such.
Sound like the low T-Wolves based on that response.
I was looking for a
low
T joke.
Energy.
I was looking for a low T right. joke, but you beat me to it. Alabaster,
speaking,
what you
speaking of low T.
Oh, come on. I'm flustered now.
He's got no counter. He's oh, so come
Alabaster
on.
Alabaster, very
oh,
rosy.
Oh, comma, come on. Dot.
So what I was going to ask you, this does open the door to a fun conversation of if you could change some rules in the NBA of how the NBA is to make it more fun, what would you do? Because off the top of my head, I'm thinking 50-game season. Like, the season's too long. Make it matter.
Yeah,
shorten
yeah.
it.
I want every team to play each other, like, twice, and then we're good. And I want no draft, and give me those two things. I guarantee TV ratings will not be a problem.
I love that. I like the no draft. Dunks. Then we can have a free agency extravaganza in the offseason.
Yes.
As you spend your money to either get veterans or you get rookies, and then we have like a draft-type show around the free agent extravaganza.
Yes. Televise
also,
everything.
Also, I mean, bleep the salary cap. Soft or hard,
ooh,
get them out of here.
Ooh.
In a half-court setting, dunks are worth 3 points. And sort of work cut off
one.
the corner 3-point line. And look, I am still of this opinion because technically, and this is just a bunch of words, but technically, you can actually jump above or through from the free throw line to the basket for a free throw. Like, as long as you don't actually step over the line, you can jump. Nice. And so, like, a guy like Shaq, a 50% free throw shooter, can just get a little bit of a 2-foot running start and just kind of go running layup, and it's got to go through the rim before he actually lands. That's either that or just get rid of free throws altogether. Just, you know, one to make two, whatever. But those are my rules.
Yeah, eliminating the free throw or reducing the free throw, I'd like. What are we thinking about a 4-point line or something like that with the anybody interested in
I'm
that?
Not opposed. What that would do I'm to not the opposed. Game? I'm not opposed I guess to the 4-point line.
It scares me for what it would do to the game because it might distort it even more than it's already distorted. But I don't know. I'd be interested in
just
giving
in
that,
the last 2 minutes. Just in the last 2 minutes.
I want every game's team to never be over.
Honestly, coaches now dress like they're just like on the bench wearing warm-ups anyway. I would say we're either mandating black tie attire for coaches or they have to play.
Tuxedos?
It's one of the two. Yeah, exactly. Or you know, a shawl collar. Yeah, cummerbund. You know, don't have to be a tuxedo necessarily, but you'd have to really get, you know.
What about 2-point conversions?
Academy Awards worthy.
Let's add, you must go for two. No more extra points in the NBA. I just
How about if you throw the ball up through the hoop, you get to
okay.
remove
I think
points.
We're done. I think we've got to the end of it.
You think it's really easy?
Taking away points. So you're exactly just throwing the ball under the hoop.
Yes. If like you're playing 21 and you can like, you know, like a tap in, like you can do it, but you have to tap in up through the hoop and it undoes the points that have just been scored.
So not to cut off this riveting discussion, but I have another tangent for you. And that is
Hold on. I forgot the rule that we came up with because the Celtics were counting quarters. We just, like, you win. It's like tennis rules in that each quarter is a set, and you have to win 3 quarters to win the game, in which the case that we're making about the game being out of reach, we eliminate that. There we go. All right, Alabaster.
Wow.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
See, this made me think of one thing. Did you guys know that 2-point conversions were only added to the NFL in 1994? Doesn't that feel insane? No? Okay.
Wait.
That's just me.
I mean, I'm older. You're 17 old. Years old in 1994. I was like, oh, wow, 2-point conversions. I'll never forget when this happened. So yeah.
I remember when people were arguing about it on radio shows back then because we didn't have TV back then.
Here's the issue with this, right? 1994 was, 28 years ago? Like, 1994 to now is basically 1994 to 1962. It's kind of been a long-ass time. Only 1994? Dude, like, someone has gotten a PhD and graduated from college in that time.
You're so young. What a year, 1994. Hakeem Olajuwon wins a championship. You've got the OJ chase.
OJ definitely didn't kill those people.
Right. I mean, junior year,
Rangers.
Editor of the yearbook. It was a big year for me.
2-point conversions added to football.
How are you in the yearbook editor? Were you like, okay, we get it. Sponsored
Double
by
bell,
Corona.
Right,
I apologize.
It's presented by Corona. You always say sponsored, but it clearly says on the sign, presented by.
Presented by. Apologies.
I went to yearbook camp one summer.
There's a camp for yearbooks?
At Eckerd College in St. Petersburg.
What do you do there?
I mean, I don't remember. I think I blocked.
Just like...